Welcome, everyone, to the 2025 First Quarter Beacon Church Collaborative Zoom meeting. Today, we're going to discuss the following topic: how church small groups and adult foster care homes can become relationships that thrive. For our speaker and presenter today, we have Jody Brunau, who is with King's Table Ministries. And I got connected with her through the Disability Ministry Network. Wonderful, wonderful resource that I've been able to take full advantage
That's
of.
Bruno.
It is. Thank you very much. All righty, Jody, with
And we don't talk about
that.
him.
Jody, with that, I'm going to yield the floor to you and let you begin. Welcome.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Hello, everyone. It's nice to see you all. I'm going to move my
Hello.
thing just a little bit here so I can not look at myself. So I will tell you guys a little bit about my background. Yes, it's Jody Bruneau. And we don't talk about Bruno, right? I heard Nathan said that. That's not the first time I've heard that. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. So a little over 7 years ago, about 8 years, 7 to 8 years ago, at my church, I had some kids in youth group, and my youth pastor sent out an email to all the parents and said, "Hey, we have this opportunity to help maybe do some Christmas carols at this local group home. Who would like to help out? You know, does anybody want to be help?" And I rose my hand. I said, "Hey, I'll help." I had just gotten done doing refugee ministry in our church, and I was kind of burnt out with that and kind of done. And I was like, we're kind of looking for something else. And I've never been around anybody with disabilities. Don't have anybody in my family that has any severe disabilities or anything. So it was a very foreign land to me. But I was like, oh, I'll do it. So basically, I became in charge of it within months. And it's been 7 years, and I'm still in charge of it. So it's that one of those things. You raise your hand, you better want to be there forever. So, anyways. Both the homes that we go to at my particular church are individuals with severe disabilities. So, nonverbal, wheelchair bound, need help doing every single thing, either tube fed or need help being fed, also bathed, everything. So, when I first walked into that home, I was scared to death. I had no idea what I had gotten myself into. And I was very uncomfortable, and I didn't know why in the world I said yes. Because there was a couple of them laying on bean bags, and they were just laying there, and I didn't know what to do. So I kind of just took cues from the staff, and they went over and they touched their arm and started talking to them. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to do whatever they're doing. So that's what I did. And I left there with my heart just beaming. Like God was like, these are your people. So that's kind of how my story began. I started going to that home. We started at one home, and then we added another home in a year later. But that home, I was there once and twice a week. So it was a little too much, but my kids were all in school at the time, and I was a stay-at-home mom, so I had the time at that particular moment in my life. So I got to know everybody there very well, the staff, the residents, and just fell in love with them and had no idea. Just like I was uncomfortable, I was scared, I had no idea what I was doing. Kind of just threw myself in there and had no idea that that was what my calling was going to be. So from that, I decided one day that I needed a job. I was kind of sick of sitting around. Kids were in school. So I was like, I'll be a bus driver. That's what I'll do. I'll be a bus driver. Well, I applied for a job, and it happened to be a bus driver for special needs kiddos. So God was like, here, let me just show you again what you're supposed to be doing. So I worked with special needs children up to age 26, and adults up to age 26 for 4.5 years during that period of time. And the whole time I kind of been putting on Facebook what we our church was doing. Our church didn't have an elevator, so we got an elevator because our friends from our group home couldn't get into certain parts of our church without an elevator. So we put in an elevator. We did a lot of different stuff. So I kind of put some different things out there, and then somebody that I knew that is the person that's executive director of King's Table, saw what we were doing, asked if we could meet, and then offered me, hey, can you please come work for us and then duplicate what you're doing in your church at other churches? That's what we want to see. We want to see people that are actually going into these homes and building relationships, and it's being successful. So then I came on to King's Table, eventually quit my bus job and started working in group homes through King's Table. So that's why I said a little bit earlier before some of you were on, I kind of have both sides of it. I have the volunteer who has no idea what they're doing and says, okay. And then I have the other side of me where I've been in so many homes at this point and been in so many churches at this point. Yeah, I've got that side of it too now. So that's kind of my story now at King's, excuse me, King's Table. We got a facility a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, and we run programming, day programming, for individuals that live in AFCs, specifically targeting them that have aged out of the school system. So a lot of those individuals, you know, once they're 26, all their services end in Michigan, which is we're one of the best states for if you want to have somebody with special needs going to school. A lot of people move to Michigan for that reason. Up to age 26, most everybody's 21 or 18. So these people, once they age out, they've been going and doing stuff all day long with their schools, programs, their transition programs, all the different programming, and then they suddenly kind of have nothing to do. And if they're in a group home, then they have really have nothing to do because then they have to rely on staff to take them and do things, which we all know there's not enough staff. So for group homes, that's like a nationwide thing. So we wanted to give them an opportunity to come and do something and it be free. So they didn't have to use their funding that they get from their Social Security to try to fund anything outside of what their needs are. So I run a program here now doing that. I was still doing the our program that King's Table does, which is called Thrive. And we just hired on Victoria White, who you guys all should know. And Tori is now our Thrive director. So she's taking over that position, and I'm going to stay where I'm at, but I can still tell you a lot. So that's been really cool. So Tori's awesome. She knows a lot about all this stuff too. And so we're working together, and I'm starting going into some different group homes and all of that. So that's kind of my very condensed history of the world of disabilities. I basically had no idea what I was doing and I just did it. So that's why it's easy for me when I go into churches. I'll be like, you guys, I had no idea what I was doing. You can do this. If I could do it, you could do it. So yeah, so we here in the Midwest, Jackie and I were just talking about this. We, for some reason, call them adult foster care homes. I know other places call them adult family care homes, adult family homes. They have the term here is an AFC. And I think, well, when Jackie and I were talking, it kind of we kind of came to the conclusion it makes sense, not something I really thought about, but when you're in foster care as a child, you have somebody that's taking care of all of your needs. And that doesn't change if you have disabilities and you still can't take care of yourself later on. So I think that's where this wordage came from. I have no idea. Nobody seems to have any problem with it here. I don't know if it's different where you guys live, but that we call them AFCs, they're the same exact thing that a family home would be. So, yeah, I kind of put on there who lives in the AFC homes. It's all the same people that would live in a family home. So that's kind of just info for you. So when I keep saying AFCs, that's what I mean, because that's the verbiage we use all the time. And I don't want to mess that up with you guys being like, what is she talking about? What's an AFC? So that's my story for me. These are some of the a couple of the homes that I've went into with church groups. So one of the things that I was hired to do at King's Table first, which was our Thrive program, was doing exactly what you guys are all doing, finding small groups of people in churches and fostering a relationship with those people and getting them connected with a local group home in their area, a local AFC, spending time with them and helping them learn how to interact with individuals depending on the different disabilities. And then just from that point on, helping facilitate and helping kind of that relationship continue to grow and then slowly backing out. I did make the mistake early on where I felt like everything was going really well. We had had a visit together and I was like, okay, you guys are on your own. Have fun. And that backfired on me. So don't ever do that. But outside of that, I've learned a lot and I've kind of learned what works, what doesn't work, and even the things that do work don't always work. So it can be a little bit frustrating to get your volunteers to do what they need to do, but basically show up and be consistent is hard. But we can talk about that too. But that's what I've been doing for the last 5 years is working with churches and getting small groups in. And it is not an easy thing to do. So, and I think you guys probably all know that already. So it's a difficult task because we're asking people to be part of a messy ministry. It's not an easy ministry. It's not a ministry that you can drop things off or Venmo somebody money. And then you feel like you've done something. This is a ministry where we're building relationships and building re relationships with people that are not just like us. So that's even harder. So, yeah, tricky stuff. So here's a couple homes that we went into. I did notice over the years as I've been doing this that youth pastors are really great ones to get in and start having their youth do things in homes because they're not afraid of getting messy yet. They haven't figured it out yet. I know that sounds terrible, but they are usually more than willing to do things out of their comfort zone than maybe other lay people in the church would be. It's just been my experience. It may not be your experience, but for me, I've gotten in more churches through the youth than any other thing that I've tried. It's been tricky. But so I've had a couple of youth groups go in. Obviously, one of these is me because I gave these girls a Golden Girls coloring book and it was the best day of their lives. And so we had to take a picture. So I threw that in there because it was fun. Who doesn't love the Golden Girls? And then over here we have the one on my left side of my screen. The beautiful girl that has her arms up. She was very, very difficult person in the home, really struggled having people around her, but we would go in and read books to her and it would calm her right down. And it was just so fun to watch these teenagers be scared to death, but to go in there and do that, it was so fulfilling. So I put that picture on there just because it was a very special moment for me to see somebody see their somebody's heart, to see somebody's heart for somebody else. And it was a kid, a teen. So a couple things that I have made mistakes with, things that I found. Small groups usually work better. Well, youth groups work best, honestly, but small groups work better than having doing a whole church thing because they usually can coordinate their schedules better. And that's really the only reason why, honestly, because it's smaller amount of people. From my experience, it's been easier to work with them in that respect. So I don't want you to say don't do, ever get the whole church involved because that's a really great way to get people's interest, right? But the small group part of it is they're already getting together. They're already building community with each other. It's just one more step into their relationship to build relationships outside of their groups. So that was why I always target small groups. Plus, when you go into these homes, you don't want to bring 15 to 20 people into this home. If you're going to go into the home, you're probably going to bring 3 to 4. And that's your small group. Can get a little overwhelming. We had the youth group come to that one, that last picture I showed, and he would go and pick up the kids at school on a Friday, the youth pastor. He would pick them up in the church van, and every week we did it, more and more kids would come because it was their favorite activity. So we had to start splitting the groups to come different weeks. So it's there. The hearts are there. They just needed somebody to drive them and pick them up. That particular situation. Okay, so I know I'm speaking to the choir, preaching to the choir here. We just talked about that, but all the reasons that have been given to me, I'm sure it's that you've heard them as well. Really hard to get past some of these reasons sometimes, especially when I was in that same position as a lot of people where I was very uncomfortable. So I usually don't take that as an excuse, and I tell them my story. And that helps, but it doesn't get at, it's still very difficult. We live in a busy world. Relationships, like I said, I'm not going to talk too much about this. You guys understand this. It's hard to get people to build into other people. And you layer that with somebody that is disabled in some way, makes it 10 times harder. So ways to counteract. I will tell you, obviously, prayer. Pray that their schedules get better. I'll pray for their hearts, obviously, and for your church. Personal stories. So if you guys have somebody in your, it, maybe it's you or somebody in your church that's been affected by somebody else being kind to them in any way, dealing in this, dealing with somebody with disabilities, somebody in their family, whatever it may be, that's usually where we can get people, like telling them a story about how somebody that they didn't even know came in and loved them, and how that changed how everybody looked at the situation. And there's many of those stories out there. It's just people don't realize it. So I feel like that is a great way for me to find people volunteer-wise. One story that I use is from the church experience that I have at my church. One of the residents of the home that we started going to is Jewish, and we are a Baptist church. So it's two totally different kinds of beliefs after the Old Testament, right? And his family, and he can actually speak a little bit. He is able to verbalize himself somewhat, but his family was adamant that he would never be able to go to our church. If you guys want to come in and do anything with us and our kids, or whatever, you guys can do that, but he is not coming to your church. So just letting you guys know that. And we're like, that's fine. We just want to love your people. So that was the fir our first experience with them. About 5 to 6 months in our relationship, they said, you can take him to church, you can do whatever you want with him. And we were like, we have seen you love our child more than anybody else has ever loved our child outside of our family. And they didn't care about Jewish Baptist anymore. All they cared about was seeing that their son was being loved, genuinely loved and appreciated. And that story, I tell that story a lot because he's just a joy. He's such a joy to have around. And just when anybody's in his presence, you can just feel like, you just feel like, yeah, this kid has something that nobody else has. And he's so fun to be with and spend time with. And I can't sit and chat with him like this, but I can certainly hold his hand and we have a great time, whatever we're doing, reading stories or whatever. It's just really cool. And I think his mom and dad saw that. And that's their son. I think he's almost 40 now. Their entire lives, nobody's ever been that way with their son. So it was really cool how God orchestrated that to have us there and them be there at the same time where we were spending time with him and we didn't even know those were his parents that were there. That was really cool. Such a cool story. And so fun because it's been 7.5 years and they'll call me, they'll text us or be whatever. They're like, hey, what do you guys have in your youth groups having their, garage sale? We got a bunch of stuff for you. And even the families have become involved with our church, the families of these residents that are still around or available. So, and staff. So it has built so much. It's not just about the residents. The leadership, again, you guys understand this. Outreach, if you can find an outreach pastor, that's your outreach pastors and youth group pastors. Those are the ones that I can get. That's about it. But if the focus comes from the pulpit down, I think it makes a difference. If you have a church where the focus they don't have a focus of disabilities, I think it's so much harder because it's not there and it's not in your church. So that's one of the things, how we can counteract it is we have to fo have focus from the top, in my opinion. All this is in my opinion, by the way. training, 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 training the people that decide to go into the small group. So let's say we finally have somebody that's brave enough to do this, and they're going to go into the small group home. So training them of what they're going to see, who they're going to meet, what they're going to smell, what they're going to weird things that they might hear, all the preparing them for absolutely everything is the best success I've had. If you go in and act like it's going to be, butterflies and rainbows, it's going to be bad. So you have to make sure people understand what they're going into. And I think that's been kind of the catalyst of how we've gotten ours to be successful in other churches is because I've sat down with these groups and I've went through each person that they're going to meet and their likes and their dislikes and maybe a fun fact about them or, we have one home where nobody can sing any religious songs. So this church is going in, and I tell them before they ever go to the home, you cannot sing religious songs. It is a trigger for some trauma that has happened, and we're just going to stay away from it. And so they knew that before going in, and they felt really comfortable knowing, like they weren't walking on eggshells. They just didn't sing the song, right? So preparing people ahead of time, it's huge. Here's a couple of my homes. I just felt like I needed to throw in some fun pictures. So this is just different people that I have had at the homes. The guy on the left-hand side, he and the home that he's at right now, they are on a year and a half. They've been going to this home and they go twice a month and they haven't missed a month. And they are doing fabulous. It is my best success story. It is not easy to get groups to stay there that long and to do it that much. So they've been really great. And this, their home, the home that I found for them is within walking distance to their church. So it's really, really close. And then this was another youth group on the other side, that I had pulled in, just doing some fun stuff, all the fun stuff that we can do. So I'm just going to tell you how we do it here, kind of our first steps of learning about our local AFCs and just getting in to the AFCs. And I put a lot of information on here you guys can read, but the first thing that I usually do is I reach out to the homes and basically get permission if they would be okay if we came in, if the residents and their families would be okay if we had people come in. And kind of go from there. So there's a lot of things to think about through that. And there are legal things that we take care of at King's Table for any volunteer that goes into a home. So it's a lot of stuff that you guys have to think about. It's kind of nice to have an organization. I'm sorry, King's Table isn't everywhere to help everybody, but we go in, we find out about everybody in the home. We find out and we evaluate the home to see if it's a home that volunteers would be safe in. So this is one thing that I think is kind of hard when you don't have any kind of organization that's helping you. You have to figure that out yourself, and that can be scary. So if you guys ever have to do anything like this, you can have my information and get a hold of me, and I can help you walk you through some steps if it's helpful. But we do background checks on anybody that comes into the home. If we don't have information on them and they still want to do something, they're allowed to come out onto the lawn if they want, if we're doing something outside and we don't have something all the information on them. And that's volunteers. People in the home, that's a little tricky. We obviously don't background check anybody in the home, but we do check for sex offenders in the home. So it is very prevalent in these homes. And that is something that we have to be on top of. So that is something else you want to do, is just make sure that there's no offenders in the home. If there is, it doesn't mean you can't minister to them, but you just don't want to bring kids. So that's kind of our go-to, is making sure the home is safe for everybody. One of the other things that we evaluate when we're in there is behavior. Is there anybody violent in the home? And what makes them violent? So we do a lot of evaluation that first time we go there, and it's just me usually. I just will go in and look at everybody and talk to everybody and kind of get all the information and observe. And then from that point on, we can kind of make a decision if it's an okay place to go. 9 times out of 10, it always is, but there has been times where we've had to look for other homes because of some certain situations that were not appropriate, and people wanted to bring children to also be in the home and do things with the residents, so do activities. So we have a licensing department where I can just look them up. Here in Michigan, I don't know what you guys have. I'm sh assuming you probably have the same type of thing, but anything that is anybody that's licensed is on that list. So we have one caveat to that. In Michigan, you don't have to be licensed to be an AFC home. Makes no sense. Zero sense to me. So there are homes that I don't know about unless somebody tells me. Those are privately, some privately run homes. A lot of private homes are licensed. But so there are times where I can't find out anything about them, so I can't help them. So that's kind of the one little thing that it's kind of weird. But when I go into the licensing, I can look at the AFC home, and I can kind of look at maybe some things that have happened in the home, because there'll be special reports or different things on there. That helps me kind of determine too if it's a safe home to go into. So then I always meet the residents and I meet the staff. I get to know them. I write down what is best for that home. So it's a lot of like upfront work. So what is best for that home? What is the best times of day to have somebody come in and spend time with them, where they're going to be the happiest, the most well rested, full from a meal, not ready for medication? And those times are usually 10 a.m. and 1 a.m., almost always 10 a.m. and 1 a.m. Now, there are some
10 a.m.
different
and 1 p.m., ma'am.
10 a.m. and 1 p.m.
Yeah, 1 a.m. would be like.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I said a.m. 1 p.m., 10 a.m. Is that, I said it,
That sounds
I
about
said the
right.
opposite probably. So yeah, we don't want to go at 1 a.m. Nobody will be there to open the door probably. They'll all be a bed in bed. Those are typically the times that we can do visits, and those work the best. But I always find out from the home what's the best day of the week, and what is the best time. So I kind of get all this information before I go back to the church, to the small groups, right? Making sure that I know all the little nuances. Well, not all of them, because you'll never know all of them, but little things that we need to know about each resident. And then when I go and I have these people that want to do this, then I do a huge training with them. And this training is learning about each resident. So here's Roberta. Roberta is very difficult to understand, and that's okay. The staff will be there and they will help you understand what she is saying. So I go through every little step. So there's going to be somebody there that you can't understand. There's staff there. They will help you. Nobody cannot usually understand them in the beginning. That's okay. Don't feel bad about it. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff. I get a lot of questions like, what happens if I go in and somebody is having a bad day and something is happening, and what do I do? And I say, well, you leave. You say, you know what? The last thing the staff needs is for you to be in there. So So you just leave and it's okay. You just go, we'll go another day and get a hold of me and we'll figure it out. So kind of go from there. So if you have a point person in at the church, that would be your point person. Get a hold of me and we'll figure it out. We'll go another day when things have calmed down in the house. So what else did I do? Let's say on here. Yeah, and definitely it's always a good idea to not bring any more than who's in there. So if they have a six residents in the home, 4 to 5 people are best. You never want to bring a lot of people into the home. It's too much. Now, if you're doing something outside the home, you're outside doing yard work or whatever, you can bring as many people as you want because they can keep, get away and be calmed down and not be overwhelmed. So, other things that we talk about in the trainings, keeping visits to an hour or less. That's just general across the board, has been in every home that I've been in. That's about all they can handle. It's just so much. It's a new person. It's exciting. And it's a pleasant thing. So it takes a lot of their energy and they're really excited to see you. And that usually just kind of falters off by 45 minutes. It's just general. Always ready for plans to change. I went to a house the other day. Me and Tori did. And we were going to visit the house and I knocked on the door. The guy opens it up. One of the staff peeks out and says, "We have the flu." And I was like, "Okay, we're leaving." So we shut, we are not going into that house. So it happens all the time. What happens almost every time when I go to an AFC is they forget that I'm coming. I can guarantee it's going to happen to you. You're going to set it up. You'll be like, okay, I'll see you Tuesday at 1. And you'll get there at Tuesday at 1. And the staff member that you talk to is not there. And some other staff is there. And they'll be like, who are you and why are you here? So that is going to happen. And you just be like, this is, I always tell them who I am. I talk with so and so. We were going to come and do this. May I still come in and do that? And they're always like, oh, okay, come on in. So it's usually what happens. It's always awkward and weird. Yeah, so when you're doing activities and you're helping people learn what kind of activities work well in the house, that's something else I do when I'm in the house. What kind of activities do these residents like to do? What can we do as a group? What do we need to do as separating out? So that's a huge one that I come to the training with as well. So they're coming in, your volunteers are coming into this home already knowing that John likes to play Uno with one other person. And Sarah and Mike, they love to just do a puzzle together. And then maybe Janet over here really wants to read a story. So you got four of you, so you guys all stay in the same room, but you can all do something different because there's never a time where absolutely everybody in the home is going to be able to stay in one activity the whole time, typically. If they're higher functioning, maybe. But usually, if they're higher functioning, there's always somebody that's bored. So, and they'll let you know. but being flexible and, so bringing those activities to them and knowing that you're going to have to do different things with different people, that's okay. Don't think you're coming to have this party and everybody's going to be excited to have this party because they won't. They'll need different things. So it's helpful to work with the staff and know what works and what doesn't. Well, I said it before. A lot of people, this is a big one that I get from people is like, I don't understand what they're saying. I don't know how to have a relationship with them because I can't understand what they're saying to me, or I can't understand their behavior. Well, I know this is gonna sound bad, but I tell people, well, too bad. Because sometimes people can't understand you and your behavior, probably too. So you got to put yourself in their position. It's not their fault. It's your fault for not trying. So you have to try. And I say it in a very nice way. I really do. I'm saying it a little more mean with you guys, but I say it in a very nice way, I promise. But like you, there's no excuse because there's staff member there. There's always going to be somebody there that knows that person and they can help you. They can help you. That's why they're there. And when you're trying to understand what they're saying, I go through a whole thing, be like, I'm sorry, Mike, I can't understand what you're saying. I'm going to ask your staff. I'm going to ask what she's saying. Or she's going to tell him to help me so we can talk to each other. And then that person will come in. And then I still look at him and talk to him, even if she's answering the questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to teach that in my trainings too, is like, you got, they're individuals. You still want them to know that they're the important part of it, and you can still communicate with them with help. So that's always a big one for people, and that's keeps a lot of people away. It really does. Somebody in the home that's nonverbal that maybe doesn't say anything at all is another thing that keeps people away. Or they'll go one or two times, excuse me, and then they'll stop going because they're uncomfortable and they don't know what to do. So that's another one that we just say, you know what, it's okay to just sit in silence. I know that's odd for us, but it's okay to do that. So that's a lot of that getting your volunteers ready. Like, it's okay. She's not going to say anything to you. She might make some noises, but she's not going to say anything to you. But what she really likes is when somebody sits next to her, and that's all she wants. And she might make noises, and she might move, and she might do some things. And that's okay. That's how she is. That's what it is. That's her communicating. And all you need to do is sit there, and it's okay to be quiet. So I do a lot of that kind of stuff, especially if there's somebody nonverbal in the home. Always make sure staff is in the room, stays in the room. So we have a lot of rules. Sometimes when the staff gets a little too comfortable with you, depending on the home, they'll go off and try to get some work done. And I will always pull them back and be like, yeah, we still need you here because you know them better than anybody else right now. So that's always kind of a thing that I want have them watch out for. And nobody goes in a room outside of where everybody is, just for protection for everybody. Now, there was that one picture where we were in a room and I had the two guys on the opposite beds, that first picture I showed. That I was standing in the hallway when I took that picture and I stood there the whole time they were there. So I could still see the staff and everybody else that was going on. Because she was so upset, she needed to be in a separate room. So that was an instance where I broke the rule in a little bit of a way, but I still made sure that everybody was safe. So outside of that, typically we never go one-on-one in anybody's room. Something else that people always have issues with is, what if I'm gonna see something that's gross, or I'm gonna smell something that's gross? And yeah, you probably will. Yeah, that's life. Get on, move on. You will survive. So that's the other thing I tell people. I don't let people dwell on that because maybe they don't smell good. Maybe you don't smell good. So lots of different activities. These are just a few, but you guys probably know all this kind of stuff. One of the things we did during COVID, we built a snowman outside their window. So they could still have some sort of interaction. We put signs, "We love you" at Valentine's Day outside all their windows. We drew on their windows pictures. So we couldn't go in, but we could still let them know that we loved them. So just some different things that we've tried to do. I even did a Zoom call with a home and I washed my dog in my kitchen sink during COVID. And they still talk about that. COVID was 5 years ago. They still talk about that because they now come here and do activities here. And they're like, "Joe, do you remember when you washed your dog?" I'm like, "Oh my gosh, yes, I do remember that. You remember that?" So it was just kind of a fun thing, trying to think out of the box. We've done all these things. We still can't go in and spend time with them, but well, I can Zoom you. And here's my dog. I have to give her a bath anyways. So yeah. They can be creative. So this was another that same home, but one of the activities we decided to do is let's do a carnival inside the home. So there was five residents that lived in there, and they were residents that were never going to be able to go to a carnival themselves. It's just not ideal for them, behavior wise and just medical wise. So we brought in as many somewhat carnival games as we could and played the carnival games, and it was just fun. We just kind of We're thinking outside the box of what we can do, and we got a lot of smiles that day. So that was pretty cool. Okay, we've talked about some of this, but we can go through it again. So when I work with a group, I always give them a do's and don'ts. It's kind of so to backtrack a little bit, when we do the training, we also do abuse training. and how to spot abuse, how to keep yourself safe, how to keep them safe. Go through a lot of different things. Again, that's a King's Table thing, so not every church is going to be able to do something necessarily like that, but we can help you with resources 100% if you want help. But one of the things that we go through, and it's a pretty big packet. Unfortunately, it's a very big packet. So I got these do's and don'ts from that packet. I've changed a few of them for today because they're also talking, it's talking about some other things that we do as well. So I tried to make it so it would make sense to you guys. But it kind of covers everything in its own way. You never want to have, so you want to respect each individual. So always looking at them in the eyes, being on their level, and don't assume that they don't understand what you're saying. And don't assume just because they're in a wheelchair, they're a small child and they can't, and they don't understand you. I have a very dear friend who's severely disabled, but not her mind. Her mind is absolutely her age. She's 21 and she's 21 in her mind. And she gets treated like a baby often, and that drives her insane. So I try to let people know that you can't assume anything. You can't assume she doesn't know or that she does. So you go in and you talk to them just like everybody else, you would everybody else. So that was a big one that she's pounded into my head. She's like, don't let them pretend like I'm little. I'm like, okay. So she's really, really passionate about that because she does look, and she does look like a small child too. So that's even harder for her. Treating everyone fairly and showing favoritism, it is hard. Sometimes it's very hard to not have a favorite in those homes. I tell you, but you still have to, just like anything else, you can't favor somebody. We try really hard to only do high fives, fist bumps, side hugs. You guys know if you've been with anybody with a disability, especially a cognitive disability, they're going to want to hug you a lot. I got hugged and kissed this morning. So it just happens. We try really hard to always turn so we can do a side hug. But like today, I was trying to do a side hug and he went in and got my face and kissed me on my cheek. So even a side hug, I got kissed. So for me, like it doesn't bother me. I just don't want it to ever be construed as anything else. And I love it. And I love them so much that that hug is wonderful, actually. So this is always a hard one for me. I always want to just hug them and oh, and just say I love you. And but I try really hard to be the side hug lady. Always be in view of others. Don't ever be alone. Stay in contact with the home manager. So this is one of the things this said before. Stay in contact with King's Table. Home manager, you guys are going to be in contact with the home manager. You're going to be the King's Table, basically, of what I do. So just always making sure you're checking in with them and is everything we're doing okay? Has anybody had any issues? Like this is not like you're going to get your group there and you're going to do it and then everybody's going to keep going and you're never going to have an issue. It's just going to go well. Yeah, there's a lot of hand-holding in this ministry. It just is. So it's just one of those things that you have to be there with your volunteers. You're going to have to go to the home with them numerous times. You're going to have to show them what it looks like to love them, these people, every time. And they slowly will get it. When you leave them alone, it's a disaster. So you got to do it until you realize, okay, they got this. They got this. And then, of course, abuse, suspicious behavior, ignoring a feeling that isn't right. We have adult protective services that we call if we feel like something's going on. I'm assuming you guys all have the same thing in your states. So this is kind of what we kind of go off of. It's good things to just remember when I'm in the home. Let's protect everybody. Make sure everybody's doing is being respected and protected. So do I have more? I don't think I do. I think that's all I have on that. So I'm sure you guys have questions for me, or you can tell me that I'm wrong on some things. Oh,
No.
you know what? One thing I do want to add really quick. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Staff at these homes are really important to have a good relationship with. They probably will be rude to you and not like you. And that's one of the things that I have to tell people when I do trainings, is it's okay if somebody doesn't like you. They have a really difficult job. So you got to get past it and it's okay. Just love them just like you're loving everybody else. So I forgot I was going to tell you guys that, because that was a reason one of my groups quit, is because they thought the staff was too mean to them. So.
So, Jody, can I ask you then on that? If you have a group that quits for that, are you able to redeem that and maybe match them up with a different house? Do you meet with the group again to save that and be able to move them? In other words, where they don't say, we're never doing that again.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the personality. So this particular group, they were so upset about it, that they needed to walk away from it, and not be part of anything for a little bit. It really wasn't in my mind, in my heart, it really wasn't a big deal at all. But to them, it was really a big deal that the staff was not kind to them. I think that there was a little bit of a heart issue there too. And so I feel like when you're dealing with something like that, you kind of like have to tread lightly, because I don't want them to not ever want to do something like that again. So it just depends on that particular instance. I definitely backed off and I said, okay, I understand. Let me know when you're ready to try again, or something else we could do. We could try a different home. That home ended up shutting down. So it kind of worked itself out a little bit, but yeah, I kind of left them alone because they were pretty upset. So yeah, that wasn't a fun one. Yeah. It was tricky.
I'm Teresa. And Jackie knows this well, that I'm working with a gal named Michelle, who is she does beautiful photography. She's pretty highly capable, and she loves doing photography and stuff. And so we do a card ministry together, where we put together cards for the events that help through the ministry
Up here.
and the various holidays. And what I'm wondering is, it seems very intuitive to me that, you wouldn't want to be communicating outside of your, visits when you're going as a group to a home or you're doing things. But she and I do a lot of coordinating, where, because she'll want to take a picture somewhere and this and that. And so it seems to me, and I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to bring up that, sometimes there are a little bit different relationships that kind of take it outside of the house. Do you, Is that still appropriate though? And do you have any guidelines on that?
Yeah, so our guidelines when we are training groups is you're never going to be on social media with somebody, with the residents, really the staff too, as much as possible. And you shouldn't have people's phone numbers. You shouldn't be texting, because that has gotten so many people into trouble. Now, with saying that, outside of that, what you're doing is a little bit different. You are doing a ministry with her together. I would say that's a different situation. We've had times where we've had people give phone numbers to somebody, and then they're getting texts all hours of the night, because they don't understand their boundaries. And you just want to have clear boundaries, or something sexual has come up. And so it's just, you got to nip it in the bud and be like, just don't ever give them your phone number. So you can kind of tell by who you're with, right? The per you're this girl that you're working with, this is a relationship about photography. So we keep it about photography.
And we also go to some other houses, and we deliver bags at Christmas time and stuff, and we'll have a group of people, and we don't have any phone numbers or anything that. I mean, this is sort of a special thing. Jackie, do you have any comments on that? I mean, how do you advise people in those situations?
Well, I do see it from Jody's perspective, and I don't like any of my volunteers to give out phone numbers. Now, you and Michelle's a little, it's very unique and different, because that was deliberately planned as a one-on-one. Actually, Jody, it was a takeover of another one of our friends who passed away. Her name was Lizzie, and she had started this card ministry, and she had volunteers who worked with her. She had a CP. And so when Lizzie passed away, we didn't want that ministry to die, so we created what was called Lizzie's Legacy. So I had to find another person who would be Lizzie, but they'd be a new person, and a volunteer who could work with her. And that's how the Michelle and Teresa relationship came together. So that was really, I know both peoples, and so I'm very comfortable brought that together and overseeing it. So I'm totally cool with that. But I do agree that if you're going to bring a group into a home, that there doesn't need to be a building of relationships outside, because those can be dangerous things on both ends. And we know that people with disabilities can be very vulnerable. And so in those
Absolutely.
ways, I think, yeah, background checks are necessary. And also there's got to be those guidelines for protection, not only the group that comes in, but the people they're visiting. So I think you're
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Okay, thanks.
Jody, I had questions about communicating with nonverbal people. I think a lot of us are anxious about that kind of an encounter. How can you relate to somebody when you can't communicate? Well, I have a feeling from your experience that you guys have found some techniques for doing that.
Yeah, so I think because I got kind of thrown into a situation by my own, like not knowing what I was doing, it actually helped me understand how to communicate with somebody non-verbally, because I didn't know any better, right? So one of the things I do typically is I ask the staff, is it okay to touch them, to touch their arm or their hand? Because they can't speak to me, and I can speak to them, and they may very well understand what I'm saying, but they're not going to be able to say anything back to me necessarily. But if I just let them know that I love them by my touch and that I'm a safe person, obviously with everybody else in the room still, so I usually ask permission, is it okay if I do that? And then I just look at them and I talk to them, and it's really can be really out of your comfort zone for sure. There's a lot of, hey, how are you today? I love your hair. It is so cute today. And pink looks great on you. Oh my goodness, who did your nails? Or if it's a man, I'll say something like, have you been golfing lately? You kind of look like you like to play golf. Or I'll just kind of to play with them a little bit, or compliment them on something. And just let them know, my name's Jody. I just came to meet you, because I think you're pretty cool, and I just wanted to hang out with you today. Is that okay? And they won't say anything to me, and you have to be okay with the weirdness, the uncomfortable, because we're used to people telling us back what we need them to tell us back, and they won't. So you do. It's like you're just talking to somebody, and you're not ever going to get a response, and it's just getting comfortable doing that. I think that's it is hard. It's hard at first.
Did. But I think that's the whole idea that presence is many times much more important and impactful than words. The fact that you're sitting next to them, right, it's telling them that you're interested in them, and that you're by sitting next to them, that you are happy that you're being welcomed, right, to sit next to them. So I think presence is very important, even if words aren't spoken. And I go and visit, because we have a guardianship agency with Bridge, and I go visit many of our guardianship clients to celebrate their birthdays, and they are non-speaking. Now, verbally they can communicate with hand motions, face expressions, but I know I'm not going to get anything back. But I still sing happy birthday. I still want to do all of those things that, whether they can sing with me or not isn't nearly as important as the fact that we're honoring a birthday and that it's their special time. Paul, you have your hand up.
Hello, Paul.
Yeah.
Sorry about it. This is, I used to regularly meet a young fellow, a very charming young fellow, a happy-looking guy. Every month I met him at the Sunday evening celebration by Bridge Ministries. After some time, he stopped coming. And years later, 5, 6, or even 10 years later, I bumped into him in the hallway of a hospital. And every time I went and talked to him, he'll have a big smile and a bright eyes. So that's really a very charming young fellow. So I saw him in the hallway, and I wanted to, he stopped coming to Bridge Ministries. So I just wanted to kind of reestablish some kind of a relationship, because I'm retired, I'm home, I have a lot of spare time, and his home is very close to where I live. So I thought it would be a good, a little bit selfish. It'll be nice for me to get out and meet him and chat with him and things like that. So his twin brother was with him, so I took the brother's contact information. But unfortunately, when I called that brother, he was rather abrupt. It almost sounded like, "Why are you interfering with my life?" But they are very close to each other, the two brothers. He takes him to the hospital and places and things like that. So I decided to give him some time and call him again, because I can't be persistent without being a nuisance. What would be the best way to approach this guy without giving an impression that I'm getting something out of it? This young fellow is very charming, very nice fellow. I really feel that he can afford to have a visitor every now and then, and that
Yeah.
visitor could be me. What is the best way to approach this brother so he will give me the contact information?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. How long has it been since you saw them again? What was the been the time? So, well, since you tried calling.
Yeah, I'd say it could be a good 6 months or
Okay.
so. I'm sure he will still recognize me because we both go to the same hospital. So it's the hospital hallways where I met him. So I'm sure that will trigger his memory if I mention
Yeah.
that.
Do you have so you don't have any information, or do you know where he lives still?
I do not know. The
Okay.
brother was little protective, I would say, which I completely understand.
Yeah.
So this guy is not non. He's a quadriplegic, result of an accident, road accident. But he's quite verbal, and he's intelligent. He can talk well, and things like that.
Yeah, that's a hard one because, especially siblings, and you said they're twins, so they're very connected. They are so connected that his brother is probably like, "Nobody's going to hurt my brother ever again." So you can see why he's very has trepidation of anybody coming into his brother's life. That is really hard, Paul. I think if I was in your position, I wouldn't give up. Because, God doesn't give up on us, so we shouldn't give up on other people. But we also, like you said, you don't want to be a nuisance. I don't know. Let me think about it. I think one of the things that I would say to the brother is, "Hey, I just really enjoyed my time with your brother, and I just would love to see him and chat again. Could the three of us get together and go to coffee? Or could the three of us do this?" And inviting the brother in so we can see your intentions, I think that would be my best advice to you. I don't know if you've tried that or not, but I think inviting the brother in to see that you're an okay guy might be your best way to get there. I don't know.
I'll keep trying, and I've not been very persistent also. I thought I'll give some time, kind of a trying not to be a nuisance. So
Yeah.
I'll give it a try again.
Yeah. And I love that you understand that the why the brother is doing that, because I think that's half the battle, is understanding where the brother's heart is. It may not be because he doesn't like people. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. but it's I'm sure it has a lot to do with how his brother's been treated in the past. So I'm sure he's just afraid for him.
Thank
All
you. So.
righty. Well, we're at our 1 hour, actually in a minute or two past. Jody, thank you. Wonderful presentation. Gosh, I gleaned quite a bit. I hope everyone else did as well. Jody, we want to make two requests. The PowerPoint that we've seen, your presentation here, is it available in a PDF so that I may be able to send it out to everyone and they'll have all your notations to look at? And also your contact information. Paul specifically asked for that. I would like to do a follow-up email for everyone attending and everyone who could not attend so that they have the audio that we've been recording. They've got your presentation that they can look at and contact with further questions. May we request that?
Yeah, that would be absolutely fine. Yeah, I can send that all to you.
All righty. All righty. Well, then, without further ado, that concludes our first quarter of Beacon Church Collaborative meeting. Of course, next quarter, it'll be a whole new subject. But again, Jody, thank you so very much for your time
Yes.
and really the very good information you shared with us. I appreciate it. I think we all do, don't we?
Yeah, very helpful, Jody. Very helpful.
Oh, good. I hope it was helpful for everyone. So thank you so much. It was nice to meet all of you, and I love that we can share heart. We share the same heart. So good luck, everyone, and definitely get a hold of me if you need help.
Okay, and I'll
Right.
send out that email to everyone with the
Okay,
information.
perfect.
All righty,
Sounds good.
guys. Have a wonderful
How did you
afternoon.
do?
All right, bye, everyone.